हरिः
ॐ सह न भवतु सह नौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवासादि गौर भक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
Okay, so here then, bottom 38. But the annihilation in the sixth Manvantara, in contrast to the others, immerses the three worlds. Thus, Sri Matsudev says in the eighth canto, when all the three worlds merge into the water of dissolution, a large boat sent by me will appear before you. Srimad Bhagavatam 8:24-33. So it seems that there's even different at the end of the Manvantara. It means that they can even be different degrees of how much the annihilation is. So it appears that after the sixth, that is very major. Because then that would be the seventh Manvantara. At the end of the sixth, then you go into the seventh, the Vaivasvata, like that. So that seems to be a major one. So it's not necessarily that up to that. Because the three worlds means Bhurbhuvasva. So generally, that can mean within the general cycle would be up to Swargaloka, not Satyaloka. Does that make sense? So Satyaloka goes during the when Brahma sleeps, except for his planet. So Maharjana and Tapa, those residents go up to Brahma's planet. But then before that, then the Maharjana and Tapa and Satya, they remain, but then up to Indra's planet is destroyed. So that appears to be at the end of the sixth. So then before that, either there's more mild or... At the end of Brahma's day, all the inhabitants of the universe give up their bodies, with the exception of Markandeya. Right, so he's the only one. There's got to be someone, right? Authorities say that Markandeya Rishi, the son of Mrikandu, is an exceptionally long-lived sage who was the only survivor at the end of Brahma's day, when the entire universe is merged in the flood of annihilation. 12.8.2. According to the Vishnu Dharmotra, in a Manvantara Pralaya, with the destruction at the end of a Manvantara, Bhurloka and everything on it are destroyed, and the goddess of the earth becomes a boat carrying the seeds of the forms of life that lived on her. In the Pralaya at the end of the sixth Manvantara, however, when Matsya appeared, all the three worlds, Bhur, Bhuva, and Swar, are annihilated. Okay, so then that's at the Manvantar. So then what's below that? Then, you know, whether that's... How much is there at the end of the Mahayuga? Then that's to be defined. The Sarvasambhadini continues. It's thus having been proved that an annihilation takes place at the end of a Manvantara. We still have no more than four kinds of annihilation, because the one at the end of a Manvantara is also within the category of an occasional annihilation. Right. So does that make sense? So, in other words, however big it is, it's only part of an annihilation, occasional, like that. So here he's shown that some say there isn't a annihilation at the end of the Manvantara, so he showed that there is at everyone, just that during the other, how do you say? The other five, then it's up to Bhurloka. Right. And then, but at the end of the sixth month, or the seventh, then it's up to Swarnalok.
Which one is ours?
Ours is the seventh. Mm-hmm. So it means it's already happened. Because Vaibhasvata, he's the one riding around in the boat, right? So you start off as riding around in the boat. You know,
it seems to be common in some religions.
Yeah, no, it seems to be common.
Only this one.
Huh?
Only about this boat.
Yeah, no, the boat seems to play a big role here.
Everybody likes boats.
Hmm?
People like boats.
Yeah, people like boats. Especially when there's a flood. Boats are good. Boats are good. We also hear of other exceptional annihilations, as at the beginning of the creation in the Manvantara of Swayambhuva, and in the middle of the sixth Manvantara during the killing of Hiranyaksha, the grandson of Daksha, when Daksha became the son of the Prajetas. Because Daksha had to come back, because he got, you know, a few of these personalities, they always do something, and they end up having to appear through some other family. We should understand that the narration in the third canto of both of these, as if they were one, is due to the similarity of the pastimes, describing the same way that the Padma and Brahma kalpas are sometimes mixed. Therefore, quote, annihilation is the merging of the living entity along with his conditional living tendency with the mystic lying down of Mahavishnu. Right, so that's a generic description. Srimad Bhagavatam 2.10.6 is a definition that gives only a partial indication because it does not even deal with constant annihilation. Right, so constant annihilation is then going on constantly.
Yes.
Yes, that would be the proper term. Right? Having discussed samsta, the next topic of the Bhagavatam dealt with is hetu. Why this samsta is important, because it's not in the major element. It means not in the major. In the simplified, the five that keep a purana, is that we have this idea that by dealing with, you have to remove the idea that the material world is permanent. Because as we've discussed before, is that the living entity is under the illusion that everything's eternal and everything's full of happiness. Because that's the nature of the living entity. So they think like that. It's the nature of the spiritual world. So in becoming envious of the Lord, it's not that the idea was you'd end up in a different place. You know what I'm saying? You just think it'll go on. So you look at it that way. Just like, let's say, a criminal, they perform their activities, but they feel they will continue the criminal activities in the regular place. They don't understand that the government has another ideal. That criminals go in their own place. Right, but they're still going to think in the same way, right? So even within the confines of the prison, then they will still be, you know, making their arrangements to be happy, you know, as if. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Okay. So now hetu. 63.2. The cause hetu of the creation, maintenance, and destruction of the universe is in one sense the living being, because in ignorance he performs material acts. Some call him the person underlying the material creation, and others call him the unmanifest self. Srimad Bhagavatam 12.7.18. Right, so underlying the material creation, because he's not the one that actually does it, it's the underlying element, just like the child is the underlying element for so many things happening in the house. They're not the ones doing it. They're not cooking dinner, they're not washing the dishes, they're not going to the market, they're not making the money. But all that's going on because they're there.
Yes.
Yes.
Then Mayavadi's theory could be based on that. When they say one living entity, the one that is dreaming. Is it Mayavadi's or Buddhist? One who's dreaming?
I mean, it would still be a distraction from the actual point, because what's here is real. But the only reason that it has been produced is because the living entities are engaged in, due to ignorance, are engaged in material acts. Right? So that's there. But they'll take these things, and from that they'll come up with these theories, because they have to try to get everything back to nothing. So the point that in here, hetu, then what's being implied is, now, if it's because the living entities are the underlying the material creation, who is actually doing that? So in their theory, it can't be Brahman. Right? And how would it be Maya? Because Maya has to be produced by the living entity. At the same time, the living entity is produced because there's Maya. You know, so it doesn't really make sense. So why would two, you know, mutually dependent elements, what would be the aspect? There has to be something that's beyond. You know what I'm saying? Because otherwise, I mean, in their mind, it's all illusion anyway, but still, where does that power of illusion come from? How does illusion have power? If it's not there, it doesn't exist, how does it have power? You know? That's the difficulty, is that they're just taking some aspects like this and then coming up with something. You know, it's like something that your mind makes up, it's always somehow or another so much more easily acceptable than, you know, what the Shastra says, because then you have to think, use intelligence, and then... But the other, it comes up with, you know, then it works very nicely for you. Yeah, it's easy, you know. The hetu is the efficient cause, nimitta, of this, meaning of the universe. The jiva is that cause in the sense that in ignorance he serves as the performer of material acts. So in that way, he is the efficient cause. Because the material nature is always going to be the material cause. But the actual point is that the material cause and the jiva and their ability, that's all coming from Krishna. So ultimately Krishna is the... But the reason that Krishna is taking that position here is because the living entities have an interest in performing material acts. Some call this cause the one who underlies, emphasizing that it is a living spirit, and others call it the unmanifest, emphasizing the jiva's upadhi. Right? So if you talk about underlies, then you think of the jiva, and it's his desire, so it's actually not the adibhautic manifestation. Others then focus on the adibhautic manifestation of the material world, right? That you have the material manifestation of all the material elements. But it's emphasizing not so much the jiva as his conditioning that he identifies with it. Does that make sense? So the same point, both is correct, but it's when they're talking about the living entity, then it's the living entity who's in ignorance, but that ignorance is manifest as his upadis. So the creation is so those upadis can manifest. But the reason you're manifesting upadis is because the jiva has the desire that they are manifest.
Yes.
Does that make sense?
Yes.
So adiatmic is the underlying cause.
The adiatmic is the underlying cause. But they'll say in this way that you kind of understand the adiatma thinks that they are the adibhautic. Right, so that's the whole thing. It's just a matter of which aspect you want to bring out. That's the whole... Any of these things, because we mentioned, because it's all Krishna, it's just which part you want to bring out in the situation. Like that. So you don't want to forget that the living entity is there, and you don't want to... And you want to be very careful that there's a difference between the jiva and his conditioning. You know? So, but it's the conditioning itself doesn't do it, because it's already material nature. But that's the material cause. So the adiatmic has the desire, the adibhautic carries it out. But he thinks, because I am the adibhautic, therefore I'm doing it. Right? Like that. Does that make sense? Yes?
Yes.
So then Jiva thinks he's the efficient cause or material cause? Or both?
They don't really make a distinction. They think I'm doing it. So, but the point is, the material nature is transforming. He didn't actually do that. Right? But because he identifies with it, then he thinks I did that. So he doesn't actually distinguish between the efficient and the material. Mm-hmm. Because they think it's one thing, and it's that one thing is them. Mm-hmm. But the jiva is separate. So actually, He is not the material or the efficient cause. It's the Lord is. But the jiva is the underlying element because he has that desire. Jai sir. Chandita. Okay, so does that make sense? So in this description, you can either bring out more the jiva separating him from the conditioning, but it's his conditioned nature that is the cause of that conditioning. Or the underlying meaning that this is all going on, but underneath is the jiva behind, so you don't actually see, right? So the unmanifest means you don't see the jiva,
right.
You know, but you just see the manifestation. So it's about the upadhi. And when you're saying underlying, then you're emphasizing the jiva who's behind that. Yes?
Yes.
That the jiva is the efficient cause of the universe is also given in Bhagavad Gita. Jiva bhuta, bhutam mahabaho yayedam dharyate jagat. The living entity sustained the whole material world. Bhagavad Gita 7.5. Furthermore, Srila Prabhupada makes this point emphatically during one of his lectures. Guest, why does Krishna expand himself as Maya? Prabhupada, Krishna has not extended Maya. You wanted Maya. Therefore, he has given the facility to enjoy Maya. Just like the government creates the prison department. Right? Yeah, so you can enjoy the prison. Right? It is not the government's desire that, quote, there be some prisoners, end quote. But you are criminal, therefore there must be prison house. So you create the prison house, not the government. That's very nice. Government creates university. Come there, take education. Maya is created by you. As soon as you forget Krishna, the Maya is there, just like there is sunshine and darkness side by side. If you want to keep yourself in the sunshine, there is no darkness. But if you voluntarily come to the darkness, what the sun will do? Krishna says, Sarva dharmam paritya mam ekam sharanam praja. Bhagavad Gita 1866. You surrender to Krishna, but why don't you do it? That is Maya. It is up to you. Therefore, you created Maya. Krishna does not create. A man is hanged. Does it mean that the high court judge who orders that this man should be hanged, the high court judge is enemy of that man he's hanging? No. He has created his situation that he should be hanged. God is very kind to everyone, but we have created situations so that we suffer. Bhagavad Gita Lecture, London, August 4th, 1971. Okay. So after Hetu comes the 10th and final topic mentioned by Sutta Goswami, Apashraya, 63.3. The Supreme Absolute Truth is present throughout all the states of awareness, wakefulness, sleep, and deep sleep, throughout all of the phenomena manifest by the external energy, and within the functions of all the living entities. And he also exists separate from all these. Thus situated in his own transcendence, he is the ultimate and unique shelter. It's interesting how in that, this is Srimad Bhagavatam 12.7.19, but here, he is present throughout all the states of awareness and throughout all the phenomena manifested by the external energy. So that's the Brahman element, right? And within the functions of all living entities, Paramatma. And he also exists separate from all these, Bhagavan. Right? Thus he is situated in his own transcendence. He is the ultimate and unique shelter. The Ashraya is not here explained to be the pure identity of the jiva, for that would go against the substance of Sri Bhadarayana's meditative trance. Rather, the explanation given is this. The Apashraya, the one Ashraya above all others, is Brahman, the Supreme Truth. In the word Apashraya, the prefix Apa carries the basic sense of exclusion, which gives the extended idea of transcending. Amidst wakefulness and the other states of living consciousness, and also amidst the material substances created by the energy Maya, such as the Mahat Tattva, Brahman is manifest. He is manifest both negatively by keeping his own separate exclusive identity, and positively by being present as the ultimate witness. So here's also the negative. What you're saying in logic, there's the negative. So in his own personal identity, he's not there. Because the whole thing is dependent upon him, but he's still not there. But at the same time, he's there positively as Paramatma. Whether the jivas are situated in their true spiritual identities or covered by upadis, he is present with them in all their activities and conditions. 63.4. A way to discover the ultimate shelter, apashraya, is to know the pure essential identity of the jiva, who is designated as the cause. Therefore, this knowledge is described in two verses. Okay, Bhagavata. Although a material object may assume various forms and names, its essential ingredient is always present as the basis of its existence. Similarly, both conjointly and separately, the jiva is always present with the created material body through its phases of existence, beginning with conception and ending with death. Either by one's own discrimination or by one's regulated spiritual practice, one's mind may withdraw from the three functional levels of wakefulness, sleep, and deep sleep. When the jiva understands the Supreme Soul and ceases from... then the jiva understands the Supreme Soul and ceases from material endeavor. Srimad Bhagavatam 12.7, 20-21. It's interesting here is that when one is absorbed in the Lord, then one is actually beyond the functions of wakefulness, sleep, and deep sleep. It's another state of existence, because right? That's actually Vasudeva Sattva. Okay, so the material object may assume various forms and names. Its essential ingredient is always present, the basis. So whatever form it is, its essential ingredient, let's say of earth or water or fire, still remains. It may change the different things. So the same way as the jiva. So it means it's there, but at the same time there's a difference. Right? Earth is there, but its manifestations, there's a difference. So the jiva is there with the material body through all its existence, but at the same time it's separate. And so that's the co-jointly and separately. Okay. And this was, okay, designated as the cause. A material substance can be seen even apart from its products. A substance like earth, though found in objects with forms and names such as pot, is also apart from them. In the same way, because of avidya, the pure living entity, a pure object non-different from the supreme, exists in nine states, beginning with conception and ending with death. And yet, as a pure self, he is also apart from them. Footnote 34. These nine states are defined in Srimad Bhagavatam. Impregnation, gestation, birth, infancy, childhood, youth, middle age, old age, and death are the nine ages of the body. Right, so you've already... Yeah, when you're born, you're already on the third one. Right. Quick. Yeah, we don't think of it like that.
What is the age of your old age? Specific
just before you die.
And be
born. Yeah. You know, in other words, I say, when the guy gets into the car, starts backing up, but he's thinking about something else, and then gets hit by a Mack truck, that moment when he got in the car, he was old. Okay? But otherwise, if you're going by that, old age starts at 50, middle age starts at 30, youth starts at 16, childhood starts at, 5, and infancy starts just between your born and 5. Birth is pretty obvious, right? Impregnation is, and then gestation is what's in between impregnation and birth. Okay? But otherwise, Prabhupada mentions that old is just before you die. So in other words, everybody goes through it. You know, he said he died a young man. No, he died an old man. He was just young up until he, just before he got died. Right? Okay. Srila Baladeva Vidyabhushan comments. Earth becomes a pot endowed with name and shape, rupa. The elements can be perceived without the presence of the effect, the pot. Right? So you can see earth without having to see a pot. So you don't have to see a pot to see the earth. So that therefore, the soul can be perceived, the God can be perceived without having to perceive the material elements.
Yes.
Right? With understanding, you can see the soul. So it's not because of seeing the material elements that means they can be seen separately also. Does that make sense? Although the jiva seems to associate with these nine states, he never actually does. Just as clay is the essential constituent of a pot, yet still exists independent of the pot. So the jiva animates its body, yet exists independent of it. When a person recognizes that, whether awake, dreaming, or immersed in deep sleep, that he remains distinct from the body, then he is qualified to walk on the path of God realization. Atato Brahma Jigyasa, Vedanta Sutras 111. 63.5, continue. As stated in the second verse, 12.7.21, when one understands this one, when one understands this, one becomes indifferent to material life and competent to search after the ultimate shelter. The three functional levels are wakefulness, sleep, and deep sleep, and the word Atma means the Supreme Soul. One may reach the right understanding either, quote, on one's own, end quote, swayam, by one's own discrimination, as Vamanadeva and others did by recognizing the illusory nature of the world, or by yoga, yogena, by regulated spiritual practice, as performed by persons like Devahuti. That one then desists from endeavor means from endeavor other than from endeavor other than to cultivate the spiritual realization. So one, here the two processes for self-realization are giving. The word swayam, by oneself, implies the path of jnana, in which one meditates on the self as separate from everything else in the realm of maya. The Brihadaranyaka Upanishad relates the history of a sage named Vamanadeva, who followed this path. And the 11th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam tells of another practitioner, Dattatreya. The second process is implied by the word yogena, which means the path of bhakti. On this path, one considers oneself different from the three states of existence, the waking state, the dreaming state, and the deep sleep state. And meditates on the super soul, yes.
This is from endeavor. This is mainly...
From endeavor means that there's no endeavor for anything material. Is that so? Here is that if you're engaged in spiritual activities, then you're free from endeavor. So all these qualities that anything that's of difficulty is coming up because it's a connection with the mundane. As soon as that's given up, then all the activities or thoughts or engaging the senses, none of them are a problem because that's the natural state. Because in the spiritual world, then everybody's doing something. Everybody's thinking about something, right? They're all making plans. They're all doing everything. But it's all connected to the Lord, so it's perfect. Here, then, the problem comes up is that these endeavors are made separate from the Lord. So that's what has to be given up. So one has to discriminate that in the terminology. So it's understood is because you're dealing with a reflection, then means they have similar terms. Just like you have your arm, and in the mirror there's an arm, right? So now, problem comes is it's the same word, but it means both, right? So if you're talking in the mirror, you call it an arm. You're talking about reality, you call it here, and you call that a reflection. You know, if you're talking there, then you just think it's that, or you understand there's an origin. So that's why sometimes the terms seem to be confusing, because the terms define both states. Does that make sense? So its use in the illusory state is given up. Its use in the state of reality, that's kept.
So at that point, the conditioning don't exist anymore.
It exists, but now you engage it in the Lord's service. Because conditioning is only a problem because you're conditioned. You know what I'm saying? Because for the body, it's not that the body's conditioned. The body is just material energy. Does that make sense? It's just earth, water, fire, air, ether, and that's just what it is. While we identify with it. That's why we're conditioned. We're conditioned to material energy. But material energy is not conditioned to material. It's just material energy is just itself. Does that make sense?
So all of these diseases from endeavor is just pretty much a change of consciousness.
Yes, it's a change of consciousness. So then the endeavor remains the same, just the consciousness changed. That's the whole thing, because that's how Arjuna opens in the Gita, is that he hears about spiritual, then he thinks, okay, now I will stop all activity. And Krishna says, no, that's not going to work. It's that you stop material activity and only engage in spiritual activity. Right? Then it works. Okay. This path is exemplified by Lord Kapiladeva's mother, Srimati Devahuti, whose story is narrated in the third canto. 63.5 continued. The verses under discussion, Srimad Bhagavatam 11 to 21, were spoken by Sri Sutta. Thus, we have given a general indication of the sambandha, the relationship, what they are, how they relate to each other. Jiva Goswami gives this concluding remark in his Sarva Sambhavani. The Sandarbha concludes with the words, thus we have given a general indication of the Sambandha. That is to say, we have... that's where it ends.
Yes.
Right, so now his last of the commentary. That is to say, we have only pointed out something about the Supreme Truth with whom this text has a relation. That the truth who holds this relation is actually described by the scripture is a matter for which we have here only cited a verse about the six signs, Shadvidham Lingam, but without elaboration. Srila Jiva Goswami here determines that the main theme of the Bhagavatam is the personality of Godhead, Bhagavan. He does this by recourse to the standard method of scriptural interpretation, the six angas, lingas, the tatparya lingas. For the reader's benefit, they are presented here in table form. The Tatparya Lingas applied to Srimad Bhagavatam. Okay, so beginning and end, Upakrama and Upa Samharati. Samharati. So verse 112, the substance here is noble and substantial. And 12, 13, 12, Bhagavatam is the essence of all Vedanta. Both the first and the last chapters affirm that the Bhagavatam reveals the essence of all Vedas, the absolute truth known as Bhagavan. Repetition, Abhyasa, 2.10.1. Atara Sarga, herewith we find primary creation. Both of the listings of the 10 topics designate Bhagavan as the foundation of all these. Novelty, Apurvata, 1.2.11. Vedanti Tattva Vidha, the knowers of the truth say, other persons have not realized that of which these knowers have spoken. These greatest of all sages call the absolute truth Brahman, Paramatma, and Bhagavan. Praise, Artavad, and result, Phalam. It bestows good fortune and uproots the threefold miseries. A devotee who aims at realizing Bhagavan by deeply studying Bhagavatam gains these benefits. And the last reason, Upa Pati, 2.10.2. Dasamasya Vishuddhyartham, to clarify the 10th topic. Studying all the other 10 topics of Bhagavatam is meant to prepare one for understanding Bhagavan. And so his point is therefore that it's all about Krishna. That's the whole point. It's not about something else. Right? But because Krishna is tattva, everything is learned within that context. So there's no benefit. So all knowledge that's there, that which you could actually call fact, right, is all about Krishna. There isn't something else. He is the material energy. Therefore, any fact scientists have come up from studying it, any of the socialists, any of the economists, anybody has come up with, is coming from, it's just about Krishna. The difficulties are studying it not in connection with Krishna. That's the whole problem. So you see, even the other Vedic literature still has that problem, though it is according to Shastra, but they're still studying the material world without making God the focal point. Right? Though it's mentioned, and great personalities understand and appreciate this, but in general people don't. So even the Mahabharata, which is an amazing literary accomplishment, covering any important point that's there in the Vedic literatures, all brought into this nice story form that people like to hear. Everybody wants to hear about it, right? So the difficulty is still, it's not seen exclusively in connection with the Supreme Lord. So then the learning of these topics, you may know the topic, but not its connection with the Lord. Therefore, the weakness is how to apply it. Right? Because if you don't apply it in connection with the Lord, though you have the knowledge, you won't get the benefit of its connection with the Lord. Just like Krishna says, he is in everything, but he's separate as well as the person. So bhakti is to the person. Bhakti is not to Brahman or Paramatma. You know, the person includes these two. So therefore one has to surrender to the Lord. So you have to know this knowledge in connection with him. That's why the Bhagavatam is perfect. Because then ashraya is the main topic. And then these others are subtopics by which you can know tattva or ashraya better. That make sense? Yes? So that means it's perfect because then you're learning all these branches of knowledge connected to Krishna. Now, in here, the connection is the main thing that's focused on. The body of knowledge, that's described already in the other literatures. Right? Does that make sense? So it's not about learning that whole body of knowledge here. It's about how to connect it. So that's the real, real point. I'm not sure what it is about today, but it's been going all day. Okay. Yes.
And by developing this connection with Krishna, it's more easy to understand all type of knowledge outside Bhagavatam.
Means if you understand the connection, then you understand the actual real principal point of the science. Just like medicine, what's it for?
To cure people.
And why would you want to cure them?
Because some disease.
I mean, there's a disease, but what's wrong with the disease being there? The disease is some bug anyway. Does that make sense? You know, Mr. E. coli, he has his life, and you know, he wants to go through the six stages himself. You know, so why would we want to come in and disturb his, you know, already, you know, nice, how you say, situation?
Disturb that.
Well, but then it's just your disturbance against his disturbance.
No, we need the body to perform the service.
Okay, and why do you want to do the service?
Something to do,
but you could also play, you know, cricket is something to do, play video games. You know what I'm saying? Go fly a kite. You know what I say? Climb the Sydney Bridge. You know, that's...
Skin of heights. Skin of heights.
Okay, sit down on the beach below that and look at it and watch all the other guys go. That's something to do. And it says, so why have something to do?
Because by nature, it's so active.
Okay.
Part of Krishna,
okay, part of Krishna, he's active. But so what's the importance of that activity or analyzing that activity?
Experience.
Okay, yes, he'll get experience. But how does that? But what does that mean? Connection. It means yes, it's connection to Krishna. But how does that connect? You know what I'm saying? How is the connection of the activity with Krishna?
With intent.
Intent. Okay. But so, what's the intent? What's the importance of this intent?
Please Krishna.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And why would you want to please Krishna?
In this way you can be happy.
Yes, okay, you can be happy. So that's the whole idea, just to become happy? Or?
That's what moves the whole material creation.
Yeah. Are we sure we're not laboring under some particular conditioning here? Enjoy, everybody, be happy. Yes, that's true, but then why, but what's so important about that? Why is that significant?
Because everything we do is, we're really hankering for Krishna, but we don't know it.
Yes, so, but what's the key? Why is that we're hankering for Krishna, but we don't know? What, we understand we don't know it because of Maya, but why is that the hankering for Krishna?
The nature of the soul.
The nature of the soul. In other words, the nature of the soul is to serve Krishna. In that loving relationship. So to do that, as we discussed this morning, you have to have some medium to use. So in our case, then it's the body and the facilities connect with the body, right? So therefore, if the body's sick, then it's hard to render that service. Therefore, the importance of medicine is to keep the body healthy so we can use it as a medium to serve the Lord in devotion. You understand? Now, the details of how that medical science works, that's given in Ayurveda. But this aspect, you may not catch it from studying Ayurveda. So if that's understood, then what kind of things are you going to take from Ayurveda? Right? How to enjoy the senses? You know? But how, in other words, how the senses work properly, what situations the senses work properly so that you can engage in the Lord's service. And all those things that are designed for the materialist in the Ayurveda are dropped. Right, unless they have some at least neutral relevance to the devotees. In other words, what's directly in devotional service, what's supported devotional service, or what's neutral, you know, can be engaged but is not opposing. These three we accept. That which is not, how you say, what's not supportive, and what is opposed to, those we drop. Right, because there's five kinds of action. Right, so those will keep, and the other two will drop. So the Ayurveda being written for the living entity means it's being presented here in the material world, so it's got to accommodate all five aspects. Right? It's meant for bhakti. So therefore, bhakti directly, what's supportive of that and what's neutral to that. Like, let's say, taking your bath in the morning, that's considered neutral. Because you could take your bath and go to the temple, you could take your bath and go to the nightclub. You know what I'm saying? So it's a neutral, but it's not against, it's not opposed to devotional service. Now going to the nightclub, that may be, you know, opposed. You understand? Like that. So neutral means it's just ordinary stuff that is done in the support of, you know, for supporting those things that support or are directly used in the Lord's service. Right? Those will remain from any of the shastras, right? That's what has to be discriminated. But if you don't know its import, how this works, how will you know how to use Ayurveda? Does that make sense? What is let's say astrology? What's it useful for? This whole, you know, astronomical science. What's it for?
To find the muhurta for the chariot.
Yes. So that's the point. Finding the auspicious times. Okay, so that means, what about, you know, the auspicious time to start something, you know, just mundane? It tells how to do that, but that's the part we don't worry about. So if we're connecting it to the Lord, that part we keep. If it's not connected to the Lord, we don't worry about it. You know, so many of these things, that they may be in both sides, you know? So that's the things, that they're neutral. They could be used either way. Does that make sense? So that's the whole point, is that if you understand this, you only worry about those aspects. You won't worry about worshipping demigods and doing this and that. It is only to please the Lord, doing things in connection with the Lord. So you don't have to, you know, in other words, if an astrologer is telling you, you know, do this, you know, particular yajna to this demigod or this or that, and then you don't have to worry about those. That's the part that's not important. Right? Does that make sense? Like that. So that's how it's working, the whole system. So you understand this, Then as you go back into these other topics, you understand what's important and what's not. But if you don't understand this, then one so easily gets distracted. You know what I'm saying? If you look at it, devotees who generally go into very nicely learning some mundane science, what happens to their full-time devotional service?
Stops.
Yeah, stops, goes down. What? And so what would that be indicating? Not seeing the connection. So all that's already been covered in Mahabharata and these other literatures. Bhagavatam is for covering how to connect it so that doesn't happen. So we see all these great personalities. Yudhishthira is doing all his kingly duties, but in connection to Krishna. So that's what Krishna wants. Because otherwise, Duryodhana was running the kingdom well. You don't hear of any calamities, any famine, anything going wrong. So that means he was doing a good job materially. But no one's advancing spiritually. That's the mistake. Does that make sense? So in the same way, to know these sciences without knowing its connection to Krishna, then it becomes useless. You know, just as Duryodhana's running of the empire was useless. The skills he knew, then you could say, no, but they're very good skills. But the point is he doesn't know how to connect them to the Lord. Okay. The Sri Tattva Sandarbha ends with an homage to the Lord and his devotees. 63.6. The personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna, Chaitanya Deva, the savior of Kali Yuga, descended to this world for the sake of freely distributing worship of himself. And his followers, the entire world assembly of Vaishnavas, revere Sri Rupa Goswami and Sri Sanatan Goswami. From the womb of the divine eloquence of the teachings of Sri Rupa and Sanatana, this work, Sri Bhagavat Sandarbha, has taken birth. Thus ends its first book, entitled Tattva Sandarbha. Did we catch? Go ahead. It means, in other words, he just inferred the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. Yes.
So the first book was mainly to establish Srimad Bhagavatam and the Supreme.
Yes, because it's a study of the Bhagavatam. That's why it's called the Bhagavat Sandarbha. Right?
This one.
No. All six of them are called Bhagavat Sandarbha. So then, in doing that, since you're going to study Bhagavatam, you have to know Bhagavatam's position. And you have to, you know, position meaning it's being the highest authority, and that the topic is about Krishna, and the qualified persons are the pure devotees, and the method or the skill of one's going to learn or accomplishment or how you're going to get that goal of the Supreme Lord is through pure devotional service. So, in other words, you've established everything about it that will connect to the Lord. Right? With that, then the other five sandarbhas can be studied, where you don't have to prove that Bhagavatam's right. It's already there. Now this is the authority. So we see in the beginning, he's working mainly with Upanishads. Right? Then he brings in the Bhagavatam. Then he starts, then at the end, when he's getting into talking about pure devotional service and these elements, you know, about the Lord, then he's using Bhagavatam as the primary scripture. Because it's so clearly and exactly defines. The others give indication, or they speak in a hidden way, or they do speak directly, but not so elaborately, so much detail. So that's the whole thing. Bhagavatam brings out that full detail. Yes, yes.
So then we try to cultivate the spiritual realization by studying Bhagavatam.
Yes.
And then everything, you know, all the arrangements we do for that, can we say that it becomes perfect in this connection?
Yes. Means if by the understanding of Bhagavatam you apply that into everything you're doing in your life becomes perfect. But that's because there's practice. That's why we're called sadhakas, because it takes a while to do it. You know? And it's just like you want to learned cooking, that, you know, at first it doesn't necessarily go so well. You know, I keep burning the water. You know, all these different things. So, no?
So you start with the neighbors.
Huh? Oh, you mean burn their kitchen down
first.
Yeah, okay. Right. And then if it doesn't work out good, you can leave their house, go back to your house, and microwave something. So then, you know, so you got something to eat. Yeah.
Maharaj, could we get into the mood of, like, pure, unalloyed mode of passion?
Pure, unalloyed mode of passion.
Studying the Bhagavatam.
No, but passion means it's your, for your own purpose.
Yes.
Right.
So if it's because it's devotional service to please the Lord, then it's considered, it won't be passion, it'll be goodness. But it may have the weakness that we want to know just because we like knowing or like knowledge. But because it's connected to the Lord, that will be purified and engaged in the Lord's service. So it's still not a problem. Right? Passion means doing the right thing for the wrong reason. Goodness means the right thing for the right reason. Ignorance means the wrong thing for the wrong reason. You could also throw in wrong thing for the right reason also. Many, what is it? Is that saying about... It's something about... Oh, something about... Oh, something like the path... Something like the path to hell is paved, you know, with good intention. Yes. Yeah. Srila Baladeva Vidyabhushana concludes his commentary. He doesn't have it. Rope hanging with the pot, you know, the rope, but you just pull it every now and again into the forest water. Srila Baladeva Vidyabhushana concludes his commentary. Here ends Tattva Sandarbha, the first among the Sandarbhas which use Bhagavatam as their source, and which arise from the expert instructions of Rupa and Sanatana Goswamis, most revered members of the assembly of the best of Vaishnavas in the universe. Following the lotus feet of Lord Krishna, Chaitanya Deva, who descended to distribute his worship in order to purify Kali Yuga. The Sandarbhas contain words, bharati, of instruction, anushashana, of Rupa and Sanatana, for the objects of worship, sabhajana, in the royal assembly of Vaishnavas, in the universe, and who... In the royal assembly of Vaishnavas in the universe. Right? So it's not just talking about local. Because we always worry about us just here, because we're talking about this entire world, the assembly of Vaishnavas. This is a bigger thing than us. Right? So in other words, this mission of Lord Chaitanya and his stalwarts Rupa and Sanatana as the heads of the line, then it covers more than just what we know. But the part that we know and can take part in, that's what Prabhupada's established for us. Right? So it's part of this greater aspect. Right? So it's much bigger. So it says it's been mentioned so many times here. And who follow the feet of Lord Chaitanya, purifier of Kali Yuga, who appeared as avatar with the goal of spreading Vibhajana, his worship. Vidyabhushana has written this commentary on Tattva Sandarbha concerning text written by Jiva Goswami. May it be purified by the devotees. Okay. For the reader's benefit, it says, what follows is a brief synopsis of the Tattva Sandarbha. Summary of the Tattva Sandarbha. The first 8 anuchetas make up the invocation, or Mangalacharan. In these poetic verses, Srila Jiva Goswami prays to his teachers and worshipable deity, explains why he is writing the book, and defines the subject matter and qualification of its readers. In Anuchetas 9 through 26, Srila Jiva Goswami discusses epistemology, or the proper means of knowing the absolute truth. He first points out that all human beings are subject to 4 defects that prevent them from acquiring perfect knowledge independently. Of the 10 means of gaining knowledge, Srila Jiva Goswami accepts Shabda, revealed scripture, as supreme, for it alone can give one perfect knowledge. He also accepts direct perception and inference as valid means of knowledge if they assist Shabda Praman. Right? And then the other 7, then they fall into in support as subsections of these. But because today the four Vedas are incomplete, cryptic, and usually divorced from many bona fide disciplic succession, Srila Jiva Goswami recommends the study of the Puranas, which, along with the Ramayana and Mahabharata, constitute the fifth Veda. Next, the author proves how the Puranas have the same source, authority, and nature as the Vedas, and that, for people in this age, their simple language and universal acceptability make them even better source of knowledge than the four Vedas. Not that they're superior in the way of, their position of knowledge, but they're more important because their accessibility. Right? So that's what makes them more important to us. Otherwise, they're saying the same thing. But the Puranas superficially appear to be contradict one another. For example, by glorifying different deities as most worshipable. In Anucheda 18, however, Srila Jiva Goswami demonstrates how Srimad Bhagavatam is the best Purana for investigation. So if you want to actually know the absolute truth, then you would want to use Bhagavatam. Because you're going to use the Veda, you have to use Shabda as your authority. Right? Yes. And of this Shabda, then the scriptures, then the Puranas, because you don't have all the aspects of the Veda, but everything is given in the Puranas. It's not that we've lost the Puranas, but that, as he's pointed out, part of the Vedas are not there. So from appears in his explanation, that these different shakas, these lines in the Veda, that they bring out some different details. It's not just simply intonational differences, but there's other, the verses, what is explained in them. And like we were saying, Samaveda has 1,000 recessions. There's only 3 functioning today. Mm-hmm. Right. So then that means there'll be, first, so by putting all that together, you get everything. Right. So then that will be found, we see, in Vedanta. You know, in the Upanishads, that's given in Vedanta Sutra, but it doesn't bring out the full glories of the Lord. So the Purana brings that out. Right? Does that make sense? So philosophically, nothing's lost. But all the different Vedic elements to bring one to that may not all be there. Right? The essential points are there, because the Acharyas are backing up the position of anything that they're trying to establish with Upanishadic quotes. Yes. But the Upanishadic quotes will give details someplace, because then you also have the Brahmanas that tell about the ritual, the Aranyakas will tell about the metaphysical. So these kind of things that many times we look for, they won't be found there, but the Puranas will explain them. Mm-hmm. So therefore, of the Puranas, then the Bhagavatam's the best. From Anuchedas 19 to 26, Sri Jiva reveals the supreme qualities of Srimad Bhagavatam and shows how it is the most authoritative Vedic literature, the ripened fruit of the desire tree of Vedic knowledge. The Bhagavatam is based on Gayatri, the essence of the Vedas, because the Vedas expand from Gayatri. It is also the natural commentary on the Vedanta Sutras. In Anuchedas 27 and 28, Sri Jiva describes the basic scheme of the Sandarbhas, what sources he will refer to, and his method of analysis. Anuchedas 29 to 63 make up the Prameya part of the study, where the following principles of knowledge are established on the basis of the topmost Pramana, Srimad Bhagavatam. So we've established Praman as the Bhagavatam, and then after that, then he does the Prameya, means what will be discussed based on that Praman. Yes. Right? So you have to establish authority. Bhagavatam's been established. Now what is being discussed? That's Prameya. Mm-hmm. Right? And so that Prameya is the central point is Krishna. And then all the other 9 aspects are in relation to him. Okay. The following principles of knowledge are established on the basis of the topmost Pramana Srimad Bhagavatam. 1. The subject matter of Srimad Bhagavatam is Lord Krishna. 2. Krishna is the original personality of Godhead. 3. He has multifarious potencies, which are divided into 3 categories, internal, external, and marginal. 4. Maya's external energy works under him but cannot control him. 5. The jivas have been bound by Maya. 6. The jivas cannot transcend Maya by their own power. 7. Surrender to the Lord is the jiva's only means of liberation. And 8. The goal of life is to attain prema, love of Krishna. To establish these principles, Sri Jiva Goswami first examines the inner mood of Sri Sukadeva Goswami, the speaker of Srimad Bhagavatam. In Anucheda 29, he quotes and analyzes Sutta Goswami's prayers, which describe Sukadeva's realization and exalted position. Then, from Anuchedas 30 to 49, he examines the description of what Srila Vyas realized in trance, which is the basis upon which he composed Srimad Bhagavatam. While describing Vyasa's trance, Srila Jiva Goswami uses logic. In scriptural reference in Anuchedas 34 to 43 to decisively refute the two primary doctrines of the Mayavadis. He also explains the real meaning and purpose behind the statements in scriptures describing oneness with the Jiva, between the Jiva and Brahman. Okay, so here it mentions the two primary doctrines of the Mayavadis, and in doing that, it's the Buddhists become included, because, you know, say philosophy. From Anuchedas 50 to 52, he shows that the subject of Srimad Bhagavatam is the non-dual supreme reality by analyzing the second verse of its first chapter. In Anuchedas 53 to 55, he explains the nature of the jiva, namely that the jiva, being a fractional part of Brahman, is conscious like Brahman, but can never be equal to Brahman. But so though he's non-dual, it's not that the living entities don't have separate consciousness. Right? But they're still not going to be the Lord, because he's conscious of fully himself, while we're only conscious of part. Right? Sri Jiva Goswami explains that understanding the similarity between the Jiva and Brahman is the initial step towards realizing the absolute truth, therefore, you know, self-realization. You understand who we are, then you'll understand who God, because you can't understand who we are without understanding God. So the two go together. From Anucheda 56 on, he examines the subject matter of Srimad Bhagavatam from another angle. Here he analyzes the 10 topics of the Bhagavatam, citing Sukadeva Goswami's list in the second canto and Sutta Goswami's list in the 12th. He shows that there is no clash of either spirit or content between these two great Bhagavatam authorities. In their descriptions of the first 9 topics, both Sukadeva and Sutta convey an understanding of the multifarious potencies and activities of the 10th item, the shelter of all, Lord Sri Krishna. So you get here, it's like the subject matter of Srimad Bhagavatam is Lord Krishna. Krishna is the original personality of Godhead. Right, he has multifarious potencies, which are divided into 3 categories, internal, external, and marginal. So all those different things are discussions of this. Right? All the 10 topics that are basically discussing all these. And then how the living entity is bound by Maya, and how by giving that up and focusing on Krishna, he's freed from Maya. Right? So that's the self-realization. Right? Thus, from various angles, Jiva Goswami, establishes that Srimad Bhagavatam is the ultimate scriptural authority, and that it teaches the following: Sri Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, devotional service is the process for attaining the supreme goal of life, and that the supreme goal of life is pure, unalloyed love of God. Sri Tattva Sandarbha has presented the theme of Sambandha in a preliminary form. This subject will be fully elaborated in the next 3, the Bhagavat, Paramatma, and Krishna Sandarbhas. Thus ends the study guide for Tattva Sandarbha, the first book of the Sri Sat Sandarbha by Jiva Goswami Prabhupada. Cha.
We go next to the next Sandarbha?
No, no, those are coming after. Another 2. We'll start those when we're doing the last 6 cantos. Because then they'll get into really technical stuff, so we have to, you know, we will deal with other things first, and then when we've gone through, you know, all these creations and this and that, it'll make more sense, then when we get into it. Because it's a study of the whole Bhagavatam. So it'll be more relevant to do it in the second half of the study, where you've already studied the first half and you're doing the second half. So therefore, the Vedanta Sutra study and the Sandarbha study will be in the second half. Right? We'll start with the Vedanta Sutra, then we'll do the Sandarbha. Okay. So here, from this, we'll go into the Alagu Bhagavatam Gita. So Rupa Goswami's. Because as we see, the study of Bhagavatam is based on Rupa Sanatana's instructions. So now this year we'll do the Rupa Goswami's, the Lagu Bhagavatam Rita, and then the next 2 years we'll do Sanatana Goswami's Brihad Bhagavatam Rita. Okay. So even though it starts off extremely dry, it gets better as you go. Right? In other words, you can't have any doubts that Bhagavatam is the supreme. Like sometimes I mention devotees that, you base your life on what Bhagavatam said. They'll say, well, that's the philosophy, but then you have the practical side. Mm-hmm. But the point is no, Bhagavatam's giving the supreme practical side. Details of that practical you might find in other literatures. But the point is that ultimate point is coming from there. So if that faith is not there, then what's the meaning of studying it? So it has to be established first. That's why we brought the Tattva Sandarbha down into being the first part thing we studied when we dealt with Bhagavatam, just to establish. Does that make sense? But this is the kind of technical level they work at. But by then we'll be, gone through so much, we'll be much more used to all this.
Yes. The other sampradayas, they accept Bhagavatam as an essential book?
Means it's one of the shastras, whether they take it as a major work for themselves. Like the Shris, Bhagavatam is one of the authorities, but for them, the Vishnu Purana is more prominent. Mm-hmm. Madhvas, I'm not sure. That I know of, Bhagavatam is quite prominent for them. But, it's the position that they afford it. So for us, we will put it as primary. Yes. But let's say Ramanuja, for him, study means study of Vedanta, study of the Vedanta Sutra specifically, mm-hmm. study of the Pancharatra, study of the songs of the Acharyas. Mm-hmm. Right? So he's getting, the philosophical point, the practical thing of worship, and then one's own, mentality and understanding. So it's a very complete system. So now in that Vedanta, of course, will be study of the other scriptures. Mm-hmm. But it'll be based on that. So his commentary, his main commentaries are there. Yes. Does that make sense? Yeah. So like that. Yeah.
If the others don't accept that the Srimad Bhagavatam is the supreme, then studying it won't have that much potency for them.
The point is it will have potency, but it'll only get them as far as what they're looking for. See, the point is Bhagavatam can give pure, unalloyed devotional service. Mm-hmm. Right? The others aren't talking about that, or they'll refer to it, but they're not going into it in such great detail. They'll talk about pure devotional service, not pure, unalloyed. Yes. So therefore the Bhagavatam then opens, Vrindavan. Mm-hmm. While the others are basically interested in Vaikuntha or other aspects of Goloka, not Braja Vrindavan. So then for them is, if they use it, those who are interested in Vrindavan and that, then that Bhagavatam becomes quite prominent for them. Like that. Otherwise, why would they be commenting? Sridhar Swami has commented on the Bhagavatam. Mm-hmm. They're studying, so the Vallabhas and Nimbarkas and Bhagavatam will be prominent for them. But the element of Achinta Beda Beda Tattva, that they're not catching. So, and so it works for what they want. What if you want to go to Braj, and you have to catch the Achinta Beda Beda Tattva, and then from that viewpoint, see, through the eyes of the Acharya. Mm-hmm. Okay? So it's the thing is you don't have to worry about the other sampradayas because they're going to where they want to go. But if you want to go to where this sampradaya is offering, then we worry about it.
Maharaj,
what
to say to some devotees who are stuck in the Mahabharata to move on in the
Srimad Bhagavatam? Means they like hearing about the Mahabharata, and that's good. They're listening to scripture and all that. It's better than YouTube, So then, you know what I'm saying? So, they're going to listen to something. So then it's good. I wouldn't worry about that. The point is that it's that exposure to Bhagavatam, then it will attract the attention at some point, you know, when that maturity is there. But, you know, at least if they're studying Mahabharata, they should catch the cultural elements of it. You know, but otherwise it was just nice stories. And, you know, they'll continue like that. They'll get purified. But there should be that regular exposure to the Bhagavatam. That's why Prabhupada gave the Bhagavatam class in the morning, because then everybody would go. So that's the idea. You need to, one needs to study the Bhagavat philosophy, you know, like that, the pastimes of the Lord. Because the Mahabharata, even though it's dealing with that, it doesn't make it obvious. That's the difficulty. Yes?
Yeah, we say study of the Bhagavatam. Bhagavatam class is not exactly the study.
It is, verse by verse.
Could be accepted as
study. It's also study. But I'm saying you have the, you know, going through something, but the study is that analyzation. That's why there's the discussion. Purport is there, the discussion is there, questions and answer like this. So that you have both the reading and that insight. Let us see. Can't remember it, so it's how I got fancy. It means you have two kinds of aspects. You know, that fancy word. Because otherwise then others don't appreciate the what do you call it? Huh? Syriatum. Yes, that's the word. Syriatum and elucidatory. Right? Because when you say chronological, then they get all bent out of shape, because in their mind then chronology means it has to be according to how the time goes. Rather than it is going in time according to the subject, you know, stuff like that. So then, you know, so that the academics will get bent out of shape, we use words that even they'll have to look up. So, yeah, but it's going serially, so it's just one after another. Does that make sense? So you have that. So that's the Bhagavatam in the morning. We're going through that way. But at the same time with the purport, so that we're making connection. But in this study, then you put together all the different parts. Does that make sense? So you have, so the morning class is the Syriatum, and this is the elucidatory. Does that make sense? Yeah? In the first 3 years, then the first year is the Syriatum. The second year is, and the second and third are the elucidatory. Mm-hmm. Is done differently there because of just the nature of the books and all that. Because there's a need to have some understanding to be able to deal with the Bhagavatam. And not here, it's just, it all goes together as one course. But there, even though it's one course, it has those three levels. Okay. Anything else? You've actually
next week
finished.
We start?
On Monday we'll start the Laghu Bhagavatam. It'll be, you know, somewhat analytical, but not as the logical presentation like this will be more soft. It's technical because it's all there. It means where did Jiva Goswami get his understanding? It's just, yes, but Jiva Goswami, it's just when he goes through, he wants to make sure that there's no crack that anything can fall through. So therefore, only when he brings up a subject and he closes everything that can be a problem, then once the subject understood, then he moves to the next one. Like that. So. But it's also, yeah, it's technical, so that one understands, appreciates the whole thing.
And then Bhagavatam would continue for next year as well?
Yes, this year we're only doing first and second canto. Then next year's will be third and half of fourth, and then next year will be the other half of fourth, fifth, and sixth. So basically you're dealing with on an average, three books a year. Like that. You know, out of the 18 books. So 6 years, average of three per year. Just in the first year, and the last year there's only two. And in the fifth year, there's five. But it's 10th canto, so...
10th canto is big.
It's five volumes. So we do five volumes.
Yeah, right.
Maybe I should just bring one of those shower heads, stick it on the end so when you do it.
Yeah.
You're
going to
get innovative with this.
Or you can keep it just like this and keep it simple, you know, straightforward.
Oh, yeah. Just get the arm's length.
Yeah, yeah.
And also, we need a fan, then we have a remote, we switch it on.
Yeah, yeah, and then it's too much in the water, and then you can get the whole thing.
Then you come just for that.
That's your service.
Yeah, yeah, and then everybody will be watching.
And you just manage the smoke.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Maybe you should hire someone.
Yeah, well, after a while you get used to it, and then it's second nature.
Put on the microphone, smoke manager.
Yeah, the needed, yes. Okay, so any other questions? Anything?
Will we have a material for Lago Pago Tamika?
Should be.
Eventually.
Okay.
I think that's why we're not seeing the manifestation of it particularly. Hmm? Oh, he may have gone to Bombay for that. Oh, that's one thing, yeah, if he's in Bombay. So that's why you're worried. He'll be back to give us some material. We'll have to ask Pandavabandha, but maybe there's some arrangement being made.
That's why he's also not here.
And he's supposed to email the material to the printing office, and then I'm going to pick it up.
And then you'll yeah. Okay. What is the printing office?
That's somewhere on top of the road, so.
I see. Okay, well, so Monday 3:30. Hopefully we have something. Yeah. Yes. I'm sorry, yes.
We were just discussing today about when Lord Chaitanya, his Swayam Bhagavan appears on the, when he does, 28. And in the other Kali Yugas, does Lord Chaitanya make his appearance?
From what I understand, there will be a Vishnumurti.
He'll be
expansion of Kiradaksha Vishnu, like all the other avatars.
And he'll be teaching Nam Sankirtan?
Yes.
But he won't be teaching Vajra-prema?
There won't be Vajra-prema. So then whatever, probably accordingly, the particular time, what it is, the Lord's arrangement, but something, somewhere in the spiritual world, you know, so Vaikuntha or, you know, Dwarka or wherever it is.
It'll be love of Krishna?
It may be love of Krishna, but Krishna as Vishnu. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's like one of the names of Vishnu is Krishna also. Like in Tirupati, they call him Govinda. Mm-hmm. Like that. So it's not a, that's not a problem.
He'll appear as a devotee like he does this time?
Yeah, from what I understand. Because it always says, the Veda says that he's Tri-Yuga. So you only see him as the Lord in three yugas. In the Kali-Yuga, then he comes as a devotee, so you don't see him as the Lord. We know him as the Lord, but his manifestation is such as a devotee, so therefore he's known as Tri-Yuga. He only comes in three. That's why Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya couldn't figure it out. How he could be the... His point was, okay, by symptoms and other things, he could be the Supreme Lord. Like that. But at the same time, as the Veda says that he only appears in the other ages. You know, and, you know, I'm sure if he, you know, checked around, there was no horse, you know, and no sword, so it wouldn't be Kalki, you know. So then that was the difficulty, is that so how would it be the Supreme Lord if he's Tri-Yuga? So then the discussions of the topic matter came up. And then, having, at some point, he actually realized that he already knew the verses, but he never knew what they meant, because they were covered. But then, Lord Chaitanya's mercy, then Maya removed the covering. Yoga Maya removed the covering, and then he could actually understand what they meant. You know, so that's, you know, Tvisha Krishna means it's, he's coming, you know, as his devotee. All this. So he knew these verses, but he didn't know what they meant. And so then, having met Lord Chaitanya and his devotees, then he learned. So from what I understand is that is there. Though, you know, it can be a discussion on whether he comes at all or not, but the point is there must be, because then Gopal Bhatti Goswami, when he's doing the oblations on the yajna, you have the yellow colored incarnation in Kali Yuga, but as a generic. So you're offering to all Kali Yuga avatars, all the Dwapara Yuga, all the like this. So it's not, because before it's specific with Lord Chaitanya's associates and all that. That's generic. You know, because he also does all the Mandantars, all the Leela, everybody, you know, he goes through. So then, so from what I understand, that's how it works. Because the congregational chanting is the process. But what is unique is in this one, where Swayam Krishna comes as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, then the Treta Yuga and Dwapara Yuga switch places. So that Krishna coming at the end then is, you know, it's right close, so it makes a very nice connection. So he comes as Swayam Krishna in Dwapara Yuga, and he comes as Swayam Krishna and as Mahaprabhu. On the other ages, then Dwapara Yuga is second. Because right, technically it's more close to the meditating on the Lord and everything like that. So it works nicely there as you're coming down. Then you get into the yajnas. Then you get into the sankirtan. But it also works nicely the other way. You know, because the technicality of the meditation, the technicality of the yajnas, and less technicality in the pancharatra like that. So it can work either way. Okay. Yes.
So in Tirupati, when they call Balaji Govinda, it's not.
It's not Krishna in Vrindavan Govinda that he is. They're reminding him about his pastimes in Vrindavan as Govinda. You understand? Because they look at it that Krishna is an expansion of Vishnu. And so he has his majestic pastimes, which is why they're worshipping him, but he also has his sweet pastimes in Vrindavan. And so they appreciate that. And of all the pastimes, then Vishnu himself, you know, prefers those. So therefore, in their worship, they then refer things to Govinda. That's why they always chant Govinda. Right, they don't say Venkateshwara Ki Jai or Balaji Ki Jai. They always just say Govinda. Because that will make him happy. Right? It means that he's Vishnu, that's our understanding. But the point is that it's devotion, it's about making him happy. So therefore he likes to hear that Govinda, so that's why they do it that way. Right? So there is that there is a sweetness in the Vaikuntha aspect. But it's sweetness in the context of majesty. So that's why they can relate to what we do on one level. But on another level, then, if you talk to real scholars, then pure devotional service, they can appreciate it. Right? Yachinta Veda Veda Tattva. It works out problems for them. But things that they have difficulty with, it works it out for them. So some of them appreciate, but I don't know if any of those guys are still alive. Because we used to meet them in the 80s. You know, and then they weren't young. Yes?
When Shankaracharya said Bhaji Govinda, he also meant?
He means Krishna.
Krishna?
Yeah. Oh. Hey, Shiva, so he worships Krishna. Like that. But they, you know, can't handle, so they say, well, Govinda is his guru, you know, so therefore, worship Govinda, worship the guru. But even if you were saying that, but then the point is why would you give up that worship? You know, when you become the guru. So it doesn't, you know, so he takes a few digs at them. Right, so that's one of them. You know, That and that other book that's on the pastimes of Radha and Krishna. These two. Yes. And they get confused. With. Yes.
So for anyone who says that Vishnu is the origin of Krishna,
those are the Vaikuntha Walas. Mm-hmm. You want to go to Vaikuntha, think like that, so it's not a problem.
No problem.
No. But you also have those who are from Vaikuntha, but no, Krishna is the origin, like Bhishma Dev. So they appreciate Krishna in this position, but they like this aspect of Krishna. So you can have that understanding also. It's not that to be in Vaikuntha, you have to think that Vishnu is the origin. You can think Krishna is. Just like Narad Muni knows, but he just has that particular relationship with the Lord. So you see Narad Muni is, you know, very much involved in the, you know, Vrindavan and other pastimes. But at the same time, he's also involved in all the other Vaikuntha pastimes. You know.
So it's no need to discuss or try to clarify that Krishna is the origin.
Are you bumping into many Shris or Madhvas where this is a problem?
Hindus,
but Hindus are, that's a real Kishmi. So in there, then with them you establish it. But with the Shris and Madhvas, don't even bother. It's not an important element for the discussion. But for Hindus, yes. Because they're already confused. Because if they knew what they were talking about, they belong to a Sampradaya. So they don't belong to a Sampradaya, then, you know, they're just generic Hindus.
Yes. One person, before yesterday in the temple, he was asking me, he was saying that this is Hindu temple, no?
Oh, yeah, Hindu from it's based on the Shastra and all that, but by philosophy it's Vaishnava. So we're Hindu by culture, Vaishnava by philosophy. Mm-hmm. They're saying the culture we follow, then all those who follow the Vedas follow the same culture. So the actual point that pulls all Hindus together is that their authority is the Veda and they follow the culture that it has. Now the philosophical understanding of the Veda, that's where you get difference. Mm-hmm. You know. And in their idea, it's all one, accommodates everything, but it's not. It's actually Vaishnavism accommodates everything. Right? So the actual Hindu religion, you know, philosophy should be Vaishnava. You know, then you need the blessings of the Lord and the devotees to have that understanding. Understand? So it is, yes, you could say from that point of view, it's a Hindu temple. So the Hindu says, this is, you ask if it's a Hindu temple. Yes.
I say, but, no, this is not Hindu.
No, it is a Hindu temple. In another sense, if you're taking Hindu by philosophy, no, it's not. Right?
So Hindu doesn't mean that worship by deities? Hindu?
Does it mean? That's one aspect of it. Hindu means those who accept the Vedas. That's the broadest meaning. Now, depending where you are, there'll be more popular usages of that. You know what I'm saying? But Hindu means it's based on the Vedas. So like that, we're Hindu by culture. But by philosophy, we're Vaishnava. So that's all you have to say, and then they can't complain. They can't, you know, so we're Hindu by culture, yes, so they can come here and that's place and worship. But philosophically, we're Vaishnava, so it's about worshipping the Supreme Lord.
So what about the five deities?
What about the five deities?
Religion, the Hinduism?
That's one that's within one group of, that's generally the smartest in that. They're accustomed to that worship. You know what I'm saying? You know, so for those who are either interested in karma or jnana, this is one of the methods they can use. Yeah? Okay. Otherwise, devotees get in a lot of trouble when they tell the Hindus we're not Hindu.
Yes.
They get in a lot of trouble. I mean, that's like Singapore. That's or Indonesia. That's why it's a problem there.
You better ask somebody who's a Hindu.
Yeah, that's another point.
Right. You can ask ask him, what do you mean by hindered? You ask him to clarify what is hindered, then you can answer that question. Mm-hmm. There was a discussion about Bhagavad Gita. And they said if they accept Hinduism is based on Bhagavad Gita, then we are with Hindus.
You do have those who only accept Veda. They're a very small group, yeah. Like that. But otherwise, most all, the Mahabharata, Gita, like this, then it's all, everybody accepts that. So then it makes it, you know, that aspect. Now, how they interpret it, now that's another thing. But at least you have an authority there. So if you speak Gita, then you can establish. Gita and Upanishads, you can establish.
And the Krishna Vishnu argument, they have a good argument because Krishna is the source of Vishnu more often than the other way around. Mostly his Vishnu, right? It's only once in the 28th millennium he's actually Krishna, the other times he is Vishnu. Krishna.
No, but it's just also, it's just like, you know, how many clerks are there and how many ministers are there, so. You know, so it's not by volume that you want to establish. Otherwise, you know, the Manvantars, there's 500,000 of them. Okay, so we'll end here.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Jai Śrīla Prabhupāda ki.
Jai.
Sarva Vedā Bhakti Vrinda ki.
Jai.
Jai Nitāya Gaura Prema ki.